Hello and welcome to another A Nerdy Journey podcast episode, the podcast where we talk to filmmakers about their journeys into the entertainment industry. I'm your host, AK Moore, and my guest today is Jake Shadrake, an NYU-trained composer for film and multimedia. Hailing from Chicago, Jake is currently based in Los Angeles and composes around 10 projects a year. Jake, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's great to have you on.
Oh, it's absolutely a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I mean, you are one of my absolute go-to composers out here, and I am so glad I was able to take you away from all of your exciting times traveling and more traveling, it seems, and composing and your other jobs that you take on. Boy, do you have a wild schedule.
I sure do. And you know a lot about that yourself. So,
Honestly, I feel like every single person I'm bringing on to this has some sort of wild, crazy schedule.
That's good. That means we're busy. It means we're doing things.
Exactly. And before we get to some of those things, let's rewind the clock a little bit. What made you decide that you wanted to go into the filmmaking industry, or more specifically, composing? When did this side of your journey start?
Yeah, well, I guess it's interesting because I've always kind of been into film and all that since I was a kid. I think there's an interesting story. I've always been into music, so I've studied music for basically my whole life. I started piano when I was 3 years old. But when I was around eight, I decided that I wanted to write and direct and star in a disaster movie of this like underwater submarine that gets trapped by a monster or something. And when I decided to do this, I went right to the piano and I was like, look, I'm going to write the music for the movie. I told my mother that. And she was like, okay, go for it. And I sat down and I wrote a love theme and like a danger theme. And they were kind of good. I'm not going to lie. One of the themes I still think of as one of my favorite things I've written to this day, to be honest.
Okay. Two things real quick. Uh-huh. One, did you ever make this movie? Can I see it?
No, I wish. I got into the music side of things, so I never learned how to write or direct. But yeah.
Okay. Well, then second question is, do you have a good recording of this music? Can I play it here?
I do. I do have a recording of the love theme. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start to play the love theme right now on this recording. So we're just going to play that throughout the rest of as however long it is. I cannot wait to hear this when I'm editing.
Oh, that's so funny. I'll send it to you.
Please do. Okay. So you wrote a love theme when you were eight.
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know what I knew about love back then, but I'd seen a couple movies. So yeah.
That is fantastic. And also, I can't imagine doing that like when I was eight. I mean, I started other things when I was eight, but composing a theme is such an advanced, I feel like, thinking of filmmaking in general. I don't think when I was eight, I even considered music theming. Obviously, we know Star Wars and, stuff, and you think about that, but you never consider the motifs throughout a film. You never consider somebody's theme in a film necessarily when you're eight. So, wow, you are well way ahead of the curve there.
Well, it helped that I was, listening to John Williams at the age of five, and I'd look at the tracks and it was like, you know, Marion's theme from Indiana Jones or love theme from Star Wars. And I'm like, oh my God, so that's what you have to do. You have to make these ideas. And I don't know. I don't know how my brain clicked that, but I'm glad it did. And I'm glad it still does to this day, because it definitely helps when composing.
I could imagine it does. So then you started from a very early age, really starting to teach yourself things. I assume the minute it came to applying for colleges that you just knew at that point that the music side was the way to go.
Yeah, essentially. I actually strayed away from film in high school and when I was growing up, I did theater. And then I was in like a rock band and I thought I was going to go the performance route until it came time to apply. And I was like, well, how do I really want to make money with music? Like, I knew I wanted to make money doing music. I was like, how do I want to proceed doing that? Do I want to perform? Do I want to write? Do I want to like do pop music? And I think that's when it clicked. I was like, I want to write music for movies because that's always been my passion. And then I was like, oh, I could also do video games. I love video games. I could make music for video games. I could do everything. And so I started looking at schools that had those programs, and that's how I made my decisions.
You were in a rock band?
I sure was. Yeah.
Can I listen to something?
I think we still have an album on bandcamp.com, my high school rock band, Monkey Stealing Peach. Shout out to my bandmates. I got to shout out the bandmates. Caleb Jordal, Keenan Benshop, Charlie Knowlton, Jack Kramer, and Jonah Lazarus as well, who stepped in after our drummer left.
That is incredible. Man, you have been doing a lot for a long time there, sir.
I went through multiple phases of musicianship, for sure.
It sounds like you did all of it before you even went to college.
I kind of did, yeah.
And on top of that, I just want to put this out there that Jake is the composer of the Nerdy Journey theme that you hear every time you listen to the podcast or watch it or however you're getting this entertainment. So
that's correct. If it's stuck in your head, I'm sorry. And
you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Fantastic. Yeah. I am so happy for it. Okay, so college, you went to NYU. Was that always the goal?
No, actually. So when I was in high school and applying, I really wanted to get to Berklee College of Music. And I did end up getting in there, and NYU ended up being cheaper. So they both, yeah.
NYU was cheaper?
Yeah, they were both expensive. And I guess NYU was starting their undergrad film scoring program. I think because I showed interest in that, I ended up getting a decent scholarship, and you know, they really wanted me to go there. And so I did over Berklee, but I'm kind of glad I did because of the things. Well, I don't know. It's not to pit schools against each other,
sure,
but I've heard interesting things about the film scoring program at Berklee. So yeah. And the music program at whole, like, yeah, I don't know. It's a very different type of learning. And I think I learned a lot more from getting into NYU than I would have there.
So can you talk about your NYU experience? Like, what do you think were the best things that came out of going to college to learn composing, and anything maybe specific to NYU?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think for sure, you know, I had written music for myself before, but it was all mostly just playing the piano and to myself. And I didn't know how to record. I didn't know how to produce. I didn't know any side of the tech side of things. I just understood the instruments and like what to do with them. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing I learned in college, was how to actually, you know, put my music into a listenable and workable project than just having it something I play when I sit down at the piano. My private instructor, Sergi Casanales, was literally a wizard at Logic and DAWs and all these things, and I'm happy that I studied under him privately, because he taught me everything I know about how to produce in Pro Tools, Logic, you know, all those. So that was the big thing, and all the faculty was amazing. Like, we really had some awesome composers and people teaching us what to do, orchestration. My orchestration teacher, Mark Suozzo, he was amazing, and I learned a lot from those classes. And yeah, just got to, like, that was the biggest thing for me. I think I learned so much just in the first year. And then even from then on.
So you're saying you could have stopped after a year? Is that what I'm hearing?
I wish. No. No, we didn't even get to the nitty gritty till the last few years. We, a part of the program, we got to like get in a studio and like record with instrumentalists. And we had to, they made us do everything for them, prep the music, prep the Pro Tools sessions, everything. So it was like really great hands-on experience there.
That's awesome. And you brought up learning a bunch of different DAWs.
Oh, yeah.
Do you recommend that people learn a bunch of the different ones and then pick for themselves? Or is there one that you prefer or feel like everybody should know? Or does it not really matter? Is it like editing software and you kind of learn one, you can basically learn them all as long as you know the principles about how to use one?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of similar to that. I think they all have similar things. What I would suggest to people is just pick the one that you like the interface of the best and you feel like you can navigate easiest in. Like, for me, that's Logic, because I grew up with GarageBand. And so I gravitated to Logic because I understood how to work the system better. But every single one has its advantages and disadvantages. So I do think dabbling in each one, but then really focusing on the one that you find fits your style the best, is like how you're going to get good. Because if you try and be good at all of them, you're not going to, like, unless you're a wizard, unless you're, you know, amazing. But
so
yeah.
You're not Harry? You're not Harry Potter?
You're a wizard, Harry. You're a DAW wizard.
You're a DAW wizard. I mean, you do have a little bit of Hagrid hair starting to come in there. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I used to have it extra long.
Oh, ago, I know. So you could have cosplayed Hagrid at any point.
Definitely did once.
Definitely would have loved to see that at some point. I hope have photos.
I think I have pictures somewhere. Okay. I did, for sure.
Yeah. Well, don't send them to me if you don't want them to show up in this podcast, in the video version of this.
Yeah, I guess the viewers will know.
The viewers will know if you accidentally sent them to me or if I coerced one of your roommates to send them over.
Oh, yeah.
After college, how long before you decided to move to LA?
Oh, I went right after. That's actually something I think was a good move. Me and my still roommate, actually, Kevin Orzel, he's a director, writer. He went to a school in Chicago. We've been friends for years. We decided after school we're going to move together to LA to just like, this is the place to be to like start this industry. Mm-hmm. So we got a rinky dinky little Airbnb in K-Town right out of college and just been working our way up ever since then.
Yep. Now you're at full apartment.
Now, yeah, full apartment, almost like honestly condo. It's quite nice. Yeah. Nice. Bigger. Yeah. We have amenities. We have things we can do. We have
doors.
I have a home studio. Yeah. It's great.
Nice. It's always good when you can find that place that you can relax. And I have to say, like, when you have a crazy lifestyle like this, having that consistency of where you live is like, that's what keeps me somewhat sane.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so you made that decision pretty quickly then to move out here and getting your head start. How did you land your first job or jobs out here?
That's
and
a good question.
What were they?
I'm trying to remember what the first job I would say I had out here was. I worked with Kevin on things too. So anything he'd try and bring me on if he had a project, and same if I had something, I would send it his way. And so he actually did some motion design things. I think I worked with him on those. And then in terms of the film stuff, I actually worked remotely with people, who I either knew through college friends or something. And then really my first like good job out here was probably with Multihouse and Red Rover.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that was one of the bigger like projects where I was really scoring it myself. And like,
and
it was,
you did a lot on that score too. You did so many motifs, so many themes, and what an era to try to work into, alt history, 50s, like that's a lot to take on as a nice
project.
That
was a fun
project.
One. And that was when I started realizing, I'm going to have nights where I'm just working on music from noon until 3 a.m. And that's just what this job is sometimes when you're right up against the deadline. I mean, I'll never forget the tea shop that was across the street from me, that they knew me because I would come in right before they closed at 9 p.m. and be like, I need some caffeinated, like really caffeinated tea. Keep me up all night. What you got? And they would hook it up. And it was,
I think an interesting thing then would be to say how you got the job on Red Rover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually was, as every artist starts out in L.A., I was working in a coffee shop in Hollywood. And Michael Tesler and Julia Tranfaglia. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, to be honest.
Tranfaglia.
Tranfaglia. I was close.
You were close. I'm going to leave that in there.
Italian's weird. She knows that. It's okay.
I'm going to leave that in there, and I want her to text you after that she hears you say that. And
no, she's going to hate me.
No, she's just going
to
think.
Julia, I love you. I don't know how to pronounce Italian, even though I took it for 2 semesters in college.
Oh boy, do we need to redo our language curriculums, but that is a different podcast.
That's the facts. Yeah, that's disadvantage of NYU, the language program. No, I'm kidding. It was good. They did good things. I just didn't pay attention.
Yeah. So coffee shop though in Hollywood. Yeah. How did you start that conversation with Michael and Julia that you were a composer? Did they start talking to you?
So it was funny. I was wearing my NYU composer t-shirt at my job because I was like, it's you got to network however you can. And
you
I was in Hollywood. So I was like, I'm going to, promote the fact that I write music while I'm here.
Yeah.
So I had that shirt on and they saw it and they were like, you know what? We are looking for a composer. Like, what's your, gave them my card on the spot. They went home and listened to my music. They came back. I think they came back to the coffee shop the next day and were like, we loved your music. We need to talk. And I was like, great. Cool. So that it was literally just a match made in heaven, like serendipity kind of thing. Like them coming that day, me wearing that shirt, like just the luck of it all, like them being there when that all had my card, everything. Like there's so much, like you can obviously you take steps to network and you do all this stuff, but you really, there are so many opportunities that are just you happened to be in the right place at the right time, and that was definitely one of them.
And it just goes to show just being ready. Have your website or your portfolio ready to go. Have a card or whatever. I use a dot card personally. I love them because it's just, you know, it's a, but you know, here's a QR code, scan it or tap the card on the back of somebody's phone and they have all of your information. You don't have to reprint a million business cards every time you decide to change your title.
Big time. We actually, it's interesting you say that. When Kevin and I first moved here, we ended up meeting up with a composer that he knew through his school. He was like a faculty composer at the school. And we went and had a conversation with him. He was talking about how, like, you really do have to find a sexy way to present your stuff to somebody. Like, and that's the good, like the QR code. It's easy. It's sexy. It's like, you just take your phone out. And, like, now you have access to all my stuff. Like that is biggest advantage you can have is being ready with that stuff.
Well, you just now I'm thinking about some other things that you could do to just get your stuff out there. And I'm just, because you you work at a brewery now, correct?
I bartend on the side at a bar downtown, brewery place.
And what if you just put some of your music on at some point?
First of all, it would kill the vibe for sure.
Hold on, I'm not saying
you have to have bangers.
No, you just told me you were in a rock band, sir.
If I played Monkey Stealing Peach at my bar, I think I'd get fired. Saying we were bad. We were very good. It's just not the vibe.
We just had a movie about a monkey stealing a peach. And no I feel way. Like... No, I'm just... Mario.
Oh, we just...
Sorry, I didn't realize that one was way... That, I thought that was still in the zeitgeist a little bit. I guess not. That, my bad.
I'm just out of the loop. You don't blame yourself.
Bad movie illusions aside, I think talking about multi-house in that section is a decent segue into taking on like low paid and non-paying jobs. As somebody who does music, I could imagine that you've been asked to do a lot of low or free music and stuff like that. Do you feel like that's been fruitful to you? How do you feel like there's some you shouldn't have done or some that you should have done that you didn't? I guess. Yeah. Tell me.
There is at least one that I shouldn't have done. I won't, you know, name names. I'm not going to blast them, but there's a couple projects that have not been good experiences, nor have they led to anything. And so it's but I think, and it was something our faculty told us too, and I think it's one of the best things I learned early on, just take any project you can get because it's at the very least going to give you experience. Mm-hmm. At the very least, you're going to learn what to look for in a project, what not to look for, what to avoid. And at the best, you end up with a connection who's going to be a future collaborator for years. And that's that's more valuable than the pay sometimes. To be honest, I mean, some of the people that I've met even through Multihouse, through other companies, through friends that I still work with today, and just like, that is, man, that's the best way to get work.
Well, that is good to hear. And you mentioned something there very specifically, which is what to look out for in a project.
Yeah.
What are your red flags when you're looking at taking some of these lower paid jobs?
I think. And it's not even, this is not to, but preparedness in a pitch and in a just idea of a project. If somebody's wishy-washy about where they want something to go, that is bad news. As a composer, because as a composer, what you're trying to do is enhance and help out somebody's story, right? Like, you're not the creator of the story. You're just a different voice that is singing the story or telling the story. Like, you're adding to it. You're not like the driving force. And so you want that story to be in place, like check, like every research been done, all the like, yeah. If somebody's like, I think I'm going to do this idea, but you know, we might end up, it might be romance. It might be comedy. I don't know. That's something you don't want to. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So make sure that they have a clear mindset of what they're looking for. That's, I feel like, a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just also like having their own, you know, stuff in place, like not, I don't know. There was, I could go into this one project that they didn't even have a final cut. They told me they were going to get me a cut like a picture locked cut, and then they did, and then I scored it, and then they were like, oh, we're actually going to add 7 minutes. And I was like, you told me this was a minute and a half long thing. Yeah, so it's a whole, yeah.
Oh, man.
And that's after I already, you know, pitched them my price and everything. So then we had a whole argument about, you know, what they actually owed me in terms of money. And I was like, well, this is my rate. This is the rate you agreed to. You just added minutes.
Yeah.
That was.
That's shady. I mean, it's the same thing with anything in post, you know, unless you're getting a full picture lock cut, the minute they add something or change something, the initial pricing structure just goes out the window.
Absolutely. It should.
It should.
Unfortunately, there's no like legal, unless you sign like it's hard to get those legal, especially for those low paying things. You're like, you don't have like too much protection.
No. And legal stuff only matters if you have the resources to go after them. And if you're taking a lower paying job, even if you have a contract signed, do you have the resources to actually sue them and go after them? Probably not.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we've all had those projects where somebody changed stuff on us, and you know, you either have to continue forward into the shit show, or you decide to drop it, and it's never pretty either way you go.
Yeah. It's definitely even if you are like, it's sometimes good to agree for like a what's the name of it? There's a name for it, like a fee, where if the project gets cut, you still get at least half of your pay as a composer because you did the work, and just because they aren't going to use it or not, you still get paid for the work you did.
Yeah.
Wow, why am I blanking on the name?
I mean, there's like cancellation fees. I know that.
It's kind of like that. It's there's a specific name.
Mental block.
They're gonna kill me for not knowing the name of this.
I'm just gonna flash it on screen right here when you text me afterwards name of it was. I'm just gonna leave a pause right here afterwards so I can voice what the word was.
Nice.
Kill fee. And that was the term Jake was forgetting.
There it is. That's the one.
That's okay. We all go through those days. It's Sunday. You're tired, I'm sure.
And that's the other thing too, though, is like, even with an education with music, you kind of, I don't know, you have to, I didn't get much of the business side of things in my education. Mm. It's something I would fault NYU for. Like, I loved NYU, but they taught me more about the music and the production side of things, which I'm very grateful for. I have had to learn on my own the business and legal side of publishing and recording and all these things that are like kind of beastly for somebody, especially just working on your own. Like figuring out which, you know, royalties company to, you know, protection company, ASCAP, BMI to sign with, and how that works and how to report to them, and, you know, writing cue sheets for them and all that. Like, we didn't do that at NYU.
And it's kind of complex. Doing some post-producing work, I've had to get into that before, and I'm like, wow, I feel like this is over my head. I need somebody who knows this to tell me what I'm supposed to do here.
Yeah. It's this kind of thing where I'm like, Do I look for hiring an assistant when I have a bigger project, and can I fit that into the budget of the project, and can I I have never hired an assistant yet, but I have come close for certain projects. Yeah.
Well, let's hope you can get to that point soon enough where you can.
Yeah.
And what, going into kind of the project side of things, or even just the business side, you already mentioned having all of your projects and everything ready to share with people at a moment's notice. Yeah. What are some other things that you feel like you do to help differentiate yourself or stand out from the plethora of people who want to go into composing out here?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest draws I try to make clear for myself as a composer are versatility in style and ability to, you know, create whatever is necessary for a project. I think one of my strengths is having knowledge in a lot of different styles of music, not being, you know, a master at most of them, but knowing enough to either fake it or get close enough to make it work for a project. Like, I've never studied officially jazz, but I can absolutely throw together something that will sound like jazz if I need to. You know, I've done my own, you know, learning on my free time and things, but I've never, you know, could I do a solo for you right now? Absolutely not. Could I throw some changes together in the next 30 seconds? No. Could I sit at the piano for 15 hours and come up with something? Yeah. So it's like, yeah. And can I keep working at it to make it sound like jazz? Absolutely. And the same goes for other styles of music, mm-hmm. classical, folk, you know, hip hop, R&B. Like I've dabbled in so many that I can make it work if I need to. I think that's something. Yeah. And then I think that's something, if you want to go into media composing specifically, is very important. Okay. And I'd say aside from that, like being good to work with is like, I think it's very important to just make sure you're like able to have a good time with the people you're working with and like really be able to adapt and figure out what they need. And I think that's something I have a big strength in as well. It helps growing up in a very charismatic family. And like,
well, I would like to also commend on that side and just say, yes, you absolutely have a wonderful charisma. You are the life of any party. And every single time, I have not heard a single person say anything negative about you ever. That's always like, we need Jake here because he just livens up any room. So you have that down pat.
And that comes in handy when you're trying to land a job. Like if you're going to get the job, it's between you and some curmudgeon that's maybe better technically, but you're more fun to work with. That's big. And also on the same side of that, being able to take criticism. Like if there is something negative that needs to be said, being able to just sit there and be like, yeah, okay, cool. This isn't good. Let's change it. Let's figure it out. Like there's so much personal stuff you put into music when you're writing it. You can't avoid it. Like it's an emotional art form. And so all art forms are emotional, mm-hmm. but like you really, you know, you have a voice as a composer. And so when you put your voice out there, you're putting your heart out there. It's easy to get offended when somebody says, I hate this, when you thought it's the best thing you've written. But if it doesn't fit the project, and if it doesn't fit with you're assisting the story. You are helping tell the story from another perspective. It's not your story. Mm-hmm. Unless you're the best composer in the world. Like I think only John Williams has ever been the driving force of a story in a film. So shout out to him.
Not even Hans Zimmer?
Maybe with Dune specifically, maybe Hans, to be honest. Like I feel like they made that movie so that he could just do his thing.
That's your conspiracy theory about Dune?
Honestly, I I'm not the biggest fan of the Dune soundtrack, to be honest. But it's cool, but it's, man, is that a fucking fever dream?
Well,
sorry if we're not allowed to curse on a nerdy
joke. No. I curse all the time. We work in film. If you work in film, just expect that people curse all the time.
Absolutely. Casual cursing is very common.
Even when you're on set and there's kids on set and the first AD says, guys, kids on set, no cursing, you will still hear that first AD cursing.
Absolutely.
Everybody forgets.
Where are we?
Yeah. So all good there.
Nice.
So let's move away from the industry just for a moment. We've spent a lot of time talking about things to do to break in and to maintain good relationships. Mm-hmm. What do you like to do outside? What helps you just maintain your lovely charisma and, you know, happy demeanor and just, you know, helps you
stay sane,
but also helps you become a better you that you think and then translate back to your work.
Yeah. The thing I've realized recently too, the big one is travel. Like you mentioned at the beginning, I've been traveling a lot. I'm fortunate to have a situation that allows me to travel a lot, which is good. You know, being able to work remote and also having some benefits that allow me to do that. Uh-huh. Having a sister that's a flight attendant very much helps.
That does. Okay. So everybody out there, get a sister who is a flight attendant.
Or somebody or a friend, anybody. Just get close to somebody who's
a flight
attendant.
No, it has to be a sister. You said
it. Has to be a sister. You're right. No brothers, no anything.
Nope. Yeah. Okay. So travel. I'm sorry.
Travel,
I derailed you.
Especially because, you know, if you work a lot and then you get those times off, you really want to be able to enjoy it the best you can. And being able to see all these different places and experience all these different cultures and I take so much value in like taking in the world because it's so fascinating. And so you get a lot of, I think, benefit from just going places that you haven't been and trying things you haven't tried. And that's the big one for me. And then also fitness. I like to try and stay on my fitness game. Like that keeps me so happy and like energetic, which is counterintuitive when you first start, cause you're very tired. But then once you get in that routine, I think that's the big one for me.
I could not agree more. Fitness is definitely something for me between indoor bouldering and rollerblading. Like those two keep me sane. Also walks as well.
Just going for a walk. When I was working at, I mean, to bring it back to working, when I was working on two of my biggest projects at the same time, I would basically wake up, work, and go to sleep. Like that was it. And so I made a pact with myself that every day, it was expensive, but I went and got a coffee from the local coffee shop every day before I started working so that I would go out, see the world, mm-hmm. experience it, get my coffee, come back, and then just, you know, shut the blinds, put my computer like dead into the screen. Like, yeah, that's the problem with post-production. You never see the world. So like, I was like, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to go for a walk like that. If I don't do anything else, if I don't have time to do anything else, at least I did that. And that's,
Yeah, it can get lonely in post, especially when you're composing. And if you're not around anybody, like I could imagine you just need to get out of your own head. Same thing with writing. It's just another type of writing.
Yeah. And I definitely don't like when I'm writing music, especially when it's in the early stages, I don't like to be around people. I like to just really be alone and like experience it for myself until it's ready. And then I'm like, okay, now I can have somebody come in and look at this while I'm working.
Yeah. You just have, I think we're alone now playing in the background. So what are your recommendations for somebody who's looking to break into the composing world? Gear wise, technology wise, or any other random thing that you might want to throw in there about recommendations for them?
Yeah. I mean, definitely gear wise. Unfortunately, you do have to get some stuff. You're going to have to spend money to make money.
God like, damn it, Monopoly. Why are you right?
It's funny. I actually worked on a documentary about Monopoly.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I think finding, like, first of all, if you're going to buy gear, like, do your research first. Don't just go and get the hot new thing. Like, go, if you're getting headphones, like, I got these guys. These, of course, I'm probably the only guest you've had so far that has gigantic over-the-ear headphones.
Are those Beyer Dynamics?
Which ones are these? I think they're Sennheiser. Yeah.
Those are Sennheiser?
I think. No, Beyer Dynamics. You're right.
They are. Okay. I'm like, that doesn't look like a Sennheiser to me.
No, they're the Beyer Dynamics. They got the comfy...
These are Sennheisers.
Those are the Sennheisers, yeah. I almost saw it was between these and some Sennheisers, and I went with these for, one, the comfort, and two, I liked how they added a bunch of space. Mm-hmm. So... to not get distracted really quickly, like going and testing these things out and like really listening to what your ear likes before buying something, because this right here as a composer is your biggest tool.
For our audio listeners, he was pointing to his ear.
For anybody listening, I was pointing to my ear. That is the biggest, you can look at all the data you want about your levels, your frequencies, your reverb, whatever. If it doesn't sound good to you, you're not going to want to put it out there. And that is the biggest thing. So you really want to find gear that allows you to use your ear the best way you can. Mm-hmm. Whether it's those beauties that you have in your ears that I've listened to that are fantastic, or these gigantic over-the-ear headphones.
Over-the-ear open backs are wonderful. There's a reason I still have my Sennheisers.
Yeah.
But sometimes just having something with really crisp across the frequency range just being fantastic. I'm losing all of my audiophile words at the moment because I'm just enjoying talking to you. I'm just giddy about them. I'm sorry. Yeah. I this isn't about me. This is about you. So headphones are important.
It's about everything.
Headphones or speakers, however somebody would want to listen to it playing back. Obviously, as both of you and I know, since we both do post audio stuff from time to time, you a lot more than I do. Having good, you can't have... you can't just listen to something on one source. You have to listen to it on multiple sources.
Well, and that was the thing too. Get yourself multiple different things that you can test out on. Like I have these monitor headphones. I've got studio monitors here. I've got normal speakers there. And then I've got, at the end of the day, the car.
Yeah.
I got the Bluetooth in the car, and that's the big one. If it sounds good in the car, you're going to be good.
Yeah, because you have to think about where are people going to be listening to what you're putting out. If it's a mix for a movie, okay, probably look at a sound bar a little bit more, maybe because that's what most people are going to. And if it's a mix for a song, car is extremely important. You need it to sound good in the car. You need to sound good on AirPods. Like, no, not as many people are going to be listening on premium studio headphones like those Beyer Dynamics or whatever studio monitors you have.
And that's also interesting to bring up too. Like, if you're starting out, don't feel like you have to spend on the big bucks yet, because one, your ear might not even be ready for that. Like, you should just do something that makes you feel comfortable and that doesn't break your bank. That's not going to, like, you're like getting that $4,000 best headphone monitors ever isn't going to help you if you don't have the experience making the music yet. Like, your mixing skills might not be there. So don't stress about that either. Like, you want the gear, but you don't need to get the best stuff to start out. Like, I think when I started out composing, I had just $100, you know, 2-octave MIDI keyboard and like the M40 Audio Technica headphones, the like not even the best ones. They were like $80. Uh-huh. And then my computer and like not even an interface. I didn't even have an interface yet. Like, you don't need all those things. Mm-hmm. You can make good stuff with a little bit, but do find what you like and go for it. Mm-hmm. And that goes with the DAWs too. Like, we were talking about the DAWs. Like, find the one that you like and then spend the money on that. A lot of them have free trials. You can try things out. They have free versions you can like get used to before picking them. Which is nice. I mean, the composing world didn't used to be this accessible. It was very secretive and like very expensive and very hard to break into. And it's getting a lot better now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a few skills there. You mentioned getting good at a specific DAW. And you also mentioned getting good at mixing. Are there any other, soft skills you would recommend or technical skills you would recommend people try to get good at as they try to progress through to become composers?
Virtual instrument programming and use, like VSTs are, you're going to, especially if you're starting out and doing the low paying jobs, you're the source of the music. You need to be able to make it sound good, and finding the right virtual instruments and using them, the sample libraries and all those are like, it's a big skill that I think a lot of people take for granted, because you can write the best melody in the world, but if you play it on a shitty Casio violin, it's not going to sound good and no one's going to want to hire you. So like, getting good at like making it, that's the thing to spend the money on, is those samples, or finding ways to get them for yourself. I'm not a proponent of pirating, but I'm just saying it's out there. I know people. I haven't done it. I just know people that have done it.
So of course. Definitely. We all know somebody who's done it. We've never done it ourselves.
No, not once. No.
I've always had a legal version of Adobe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I like using those. It's about being able to use those. Because even if you do get your hands on them, you got to figure out how to actually. They're still instruments. You got to figure out how to play them. Mm-hmm. Like, learning how to play virtual instruments is very similar to learning how to play a live instrument. You know, there's sensitivity, there's modulation, there's all these things that play into the performance of that instrument that you still need to get good at. It's just very different.
Takes time. And speaking of time, you've been out in LA for about 7 years now. Looking back on all of that, is there anything that you wish that you had done differently when you first got out here, or more recently, or just anything along those lines?
I think for sure, I said this too with like NYU, they didn't focus on the business side of things. So I also, when I got out here, did not focus on the business side of things. And I'm still 7 years in trying to learn how to like really focus in on finding the right gigs and like getting an agent and all those things. And like, that's the side of composing that I wish I had started looking into more, because, you know, having those resources like agency and you know, protection for your rights and getting royalties for your performances. Like, I worked on multiple projects when I first started here and I got a flat rate and that was it. And I'm not making money off of them. And that's something that you could be doing. Practicing more. When I first got out here, I was like, I don't need to practice my instrument. I'm good. I don't need to play every day. And like, that's something I think I'm realizing now, 7 years in. You gotta play. You gotta practice as a musician. Practice. Musicians out there, absolutely practice every day. Do something, because It'll get away from you.
I'm just going to keep repeating the intro to Black Parade on my piano. That's going to be my practice. Yeah. Yeah. You know the one.
Yeah.
The only one, in fact, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you use two hands or no? Do
you just... Oh, no, that's single hand. I don't know. All right, good. I don't know the bass yet on that. I didn't care enough to learn the bass.
I have heard you play the piano. You can tickle the ivories.
Oh my god. Okay, that is a new phrase that I am so glad. I have not heard that one, and I am so glad Rolly was not here to hear that one, because that is all I think we will be talking about for the rest of the night now.
It's okay, I'll tell him it the next time I see him.
Perfect. Before we kind of step into this last section here, mm-hmm. I want to bring up, since we're talking about our friend group a little bit, I want to bring up a question for the audience and would love to hear your perspective as well. This came mm-hmm. up in our group more recently, where we were discussing what was and was not considered a score. So what's score versus soundtrack? And I'd love to hear you give your definition of score versus soundtrack, and then you know the question I'm going to ask to the audience after that. So go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. In your head, what's score versus soundtrack?
And I hope I can put this as eloquently as I did in that text.
Do you need to look up the text?
I'm going to go from my memory. I think my opinion has even changed a little bit since then. But
oh my god,
I think when it comes down to it, score is something, and I kind of touched on it earlier.
Yeah.
It's something that is written to, like, assist the picture and assist the story. And so it's like, it's not written beforehand. It's written really, it can be, but it really should be based off of the product and the story that is there and existing, mm-hmm. and not something that is written on its own and brought into a story. And so it can be instrumentalized. You can have a song that is score, though most of the time when you have voices singing at, like, you know, kind of a poppy thing, it's not score. Obviously, there's the diegetic side of things.
Yes.
Like, if something is inside of the story, if it's coming from a radio, if it starts outside the radio and then goes on the radio, if it's, you know, it's a piece of music, how do you qualify that? If it's originally written for the piece.
That scene in Harry Potter 7 when they're dancing in the tent and it starts on the radio and then goes to non-diegetic, what would you consider that? Putting you on the spot here, Jake.
I would consider it score, and I think, well, it's similar to
the other
Pirates of the Caribbean 2 in Dead Man's Chest, the two hornpipes piece where they're in the bar and they start fighting, mm-hmm. and it just starts, the band starts playing, but then an orchestra joins in that's not in the scene, so yeah. I think that ends up being score, but it's, you know, it's an original piece of music written for the story, and it is goes from diegetic to non-diegetic. You know, we could delve into that.
We could. We need a lot of people commenting here to help us.
Seriously, we need a whole symposium on what makes music score versus soundtrack.
Oh boy,
where we have like a whiteboard and we put different pieces for different music and then movies.
I'm just imagining what this Reddit thread might become.
Oh,
because
man.
Boy, will this just go down so many rabbit holes.
And it'd be a heck of a Venn diagram. I think you'd have like three intersecting circles and different. Yeah, I don't know.
Probably. But, yeah, because it's score versus soundtrack. And then at what point does diegetic versus non-diegetic music play a role? Now, the big question, though, is the Cantina Band theme in Star Wars, is that piece, score, or soundtrack?
I still don't know. I still am undecided. I have no. It's, you know what? If I'm saying two hornpipes from Dead Man's Chest is score.
Uh-huh.
Then I'm going to go ahead and say the Cantina Band is score, because it starts the same kind of way where when you first hear the piece, you don't know it's diegetic,
mm-hmm.
and then it becomes diegetic. But it starts as this overbearing piece of music that's kind of score, and then you realize, oh, the band is playing it, and then they quiet down. So, but no one...
But
AK.
It's diegetic in the scene for basically the whole time. The question is, I guess, was it written beforehand? Was it written post?
Or what does it do for the story?
What does it do for the story? Yeah.
Like, there's a montage of characters that you see during it. So I think in that, but, and it's an original piece. Oh, man, I don't, I'm going to say, and maybe I'll get absolutely hosed for this, that it's a piece of score. And I'll have to ask my buddy, Jonathan Russell, who's another composer friend of mine who I studied with at NYU. I'll have to ask him what he thinks, because he would have some thoughts on this, I'm sure.
I just want as many people commenting on this as possible to say whether or not they think this is score or soundtrack.
Get a poll in the comments.
Let's get a poll going. Who thinks that the Cantina band theme is score? Who thinks that it's soundtrack? Or is it some other third thing we're not even thinking of?
Right. Is it the third circle in the Venn diagram?
The third circle in the Venn diagram, Jake?
Chaos.
No, chaos is a ladder, not music.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Well, silliness aside, looking at what's going ahead for your career, you've gone through the last 7 years. You've been getting pretty steady music gigs. Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
Coming up, I'm working on a couple short films, and then I am starting my first solo feature this year.
Congrats!
Thank you. Yeah. I'm definitely excited about that. I've worked on a couple features as an assistant and with additional music, but I'm very, very excited to have my own project to myself. And sadly, it's a horror film, and I'm horrible at watching horror films. So.
Oh, thank God it's not just me. Because I mean, I fully respect horror films, but boy, can I not watch them. And if you have to watch that at night and score it at night, you're just going to be scaring the shit out of yourself with your own music cues.
Yep. I did already. I have all, with the demo that I wrote for them, I was up till 4 a.m. Because I do this thing where I listen to my music once I finalize a track, and I'll just go back and listen to it on repeat just to really take it in. And I did that with that, and I couldn't sleep. I haven't listened to it since, to be honest.
I remember there was a short film I was doing a sound mix and sound design job on, and Rolly and Amanda, my roommates, were out of town that the weekend that I was really getting it done. And I refused to open the project the minute the sun went down because I would start to get in my head. I would think that I would see things out of the corner of my eye towards the door or stuff, just because I'd be putting in sound cues that would just scare the shit out of me. I distinctly remember this one part where I had taken my Sennheisers off because I was mixing on those, and I had taken them off. And I forgot that I had pressed render assets. So it was processing in the background, and I went to start doing some other stuff on my computer. And then all of a sudden, I start to hear this faint screaming sound coming from some vague place. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And it took me a solid minute to realize, oh, the video's playing. It's coming from my headphones that are on the side of my desk that I just couldn't figure out where the sound was coming from. I'm like, is it coming from outside the door?
Well, you'd think after listening to it for hours, putting it in there, that you'd be able to recognize the sound, but no.
No. I am a wimp when it comes to horror films. And it's not because I think that they're bad or anything. It's just have an overactive imagination that my rational brain goes out the window at 9 o'clock at night, and if I hear something, there's something in the house. It's gonna get me. Doesn't matter that I don't believe in ghosts or any of that other stuff. At 9 o'clock, plausible deniability kicks in, and I just
you're just like, this is the end.
This is the end. I'm dying.
Well, I used to. This is embarrassing, but I'll tell this story because I think it's funny. When I was younger, I was so paranoid and scared because I also am the same. After I watched horror movies, I would sleep next to my bed. Because my bed was between the door to my room and where I would sleep next to it. So if anything came in and looked at my door, they'd be like, no, the bed's empty. We're going to go whatever. Air mattress thing and sleep on next to me because I'm that much of a wimp. So I have to work on a horror film and stay up all night watching those SFX shots.
You broke up there for a minute, but I'll keep it in because I don't want to mess up the flow. All good. We get the point.
I was a wimp and I still am.
Well, I don't think it's wimp. I think we both just have very active imaginations that play tricks on us when it's darker.
We're creative. Yeah.
We're very creative people, and sometimes our brains are too creative. Regardless of what I keep telling myself is or is not real, or what I truly believe is or is not real, doesn't matter. If my brain tells me there's something in the room, there's something in the room.
Yep. I don't believe in ghosts, but I know I could be possessed at some point. I'm not ruling it out.
Exactly.
I can't like physically attack a ghost, so it scares me even more.
Exactly. Yeah, or at least what we think a ghost is. Who knows what a ghost is? If a ghost exists, what actually is a ghost? Anyway, podcasts, different podcast right there.
That's our different
different podcast, exactly. Not getting into any of that stuff. So Jake, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. How can people find your work? How can they follow along with you and your journey? Yeah.
You can find me. You can just look me up. JakeShadrake.com is my website. I can put a
link
or something. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and find the same link through there. Uh-huh. Those are my main, contact points for sure.
Awesome.
But yeah, and then, IMDb, I'm on there too. Yeah, all those.
All of the associated sites. All of
the
sites. Film,
the ones you have to fucking sign up for when you start this industry. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. IMDb Pro does come in handy a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jake, once again, thank you so much. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Please don't forget to like, comment, and message us on whether or not you think that the Cantina Band song is score or soundtrack.
Do you have the budget to start playing it right now?
No, I do not have that budget. I do not, maybe if Lucasfilm still owned it. No. Yes, the 5-second rule, but I don't know if this counts here, and I don't want to test Disney's lawyers at the moment.
I don't either.
I want to respect that it is their property, and I am not going to use it for my own personal gain at this moment. But everybody, thank you so much for listening. Let's start this debate in the comments. And don't forget to follow along at A Nerdy Journey on Instagram, Twitter, Threads for some reason, along with on Spotify, A Nerdy Journey, YouTube, A Nerdy Journey, everywhere as A Nerdy Journey. I also occasionally stream on Twitch. I am a big chess player. I love chess. So please follow along my journey and everybody else's. Thank you so much for watching and or listening, and I will see you on the next one.